Welcome, listeners. Today we talk about a very dark and grim game franchise, so gather around. This retirement home simulator is full of murder and death and weird and intricate family dynamics. FromSoft games are anything but soft, and as such, there are some warnings for this episode. We discuss things that involve minors and dubious relationships, fantasy monstrous childbirths that involve violence, child death, and violence towards women. Now, after that warning, join us for a discussion of the Dark Souls games.
Welcome to In Media Les, a podcast about queer relationships in media. I'm Chloe.
And I'm Val.
And today, we are going to be discussing a topic near and dear to my heart, which is all the From Software games. Val is a big fan of these games as well. She's played all of them. She's 100% speedrunned all of them. You can see her on all the leaderboards.
She's a moderator obsessed on their Reddit.
Yeah, if anyone loves FromSoft, it is Val.
I'm soft for them.
God. Have you actually ever played any FromSoft game?
I have seen my brother and cousin play them, and I have seen you and Becky play it.
Well,
I have watched one speedrun. I don't know how I made it through the entire thing, but it was fascinating.
Speedruns are really interesting, actually. I think, especially if you have someone explaining to you, like, what's going
they
on.
They weren't explaining.
Oh, okay. Well, I can send you a video. There's this guy, I don't remember his name, but he does these, like, speedruns explained, where he explains, like, why they do all the weird stuff, where they, like, run into a wall for 30 seconds or whatever that they do, and all this stuff around, like, I don't know, frame perfect, out of bounds, skip memory loading, I don't know, whatever. They've got all these terms. Anyway, but we're not talking about speedrunning. We're talking about the Dark Souls series.
And the game about the elderly, right?
Yes, the elderly game Elden Ring. Not really Demon Souls or Sekiro that much, because I don't think there's that many queer themes in them. I really like Demon Souls. I actually haven't played Sekiro. I think they tend to, they're a little less, there's not as much queerness in them.
But you're the inspiration,
the inspiration for this, just to mention, came from Dark Souls 2. I'm going out of order, but there's that Tumblr post about the gender swap coffin, which exists in the things betwixt, and if your character enters it, they swap to the other gender. And
that one other gender.
It's video games, there's two genders. It's guarded by the two ogres, and people joke about the fact that, like, oh, the Dark Souls 2 gender coffin guarded by the Dark Souls 2 gender ogres. I think you sent me this, or Becky did, and I just thought, like, we should
the
talk
coffin?
About... Yes.
Yeah, like, it was probably me.
The Tumblr post about it.
It was probably both of us, let's be real.
I feel like I've been sent it multiple times, but, like, I felt like, okay, yeah, let's talk about like, queerness in these video games, because there's a lot of it, actually, and it's interesting. So now that I've talked about Dark Souls 2, let's go back to Dark Souls 1, and let's talk about one of the first NPCs you actually meet, which is Solaire of Astora.
That's where you live.
Astora, not Astoria. I know, I got very excited the first time I played it. I was like, Astoria? No, Astora. Solaire is probably, like, the breakout character from Dark Souls 1. If you ask anyone about, like, their favorite character or, like, one of the most memorable characters, it's often Solaire. He's the sun bro, is what people call him. You meet him, and he's very different from a lot of the other characters I think you meet in the game. He's very nice and friendly and just, like, outgoing, invites you to participate in a little, what he calls, jolly cooperation. And he's just in a game that's very much about, like, the decaying of the world and the descent into darkness and the I'm trying to kind of put this. So I should probably back up and talk about what Dark Souls 1 is kind
he's
of about.
He's the night guy.
Yes.
I've seen
yes.
the night
yeah,
guy before.
Yeah, he's the guy with the sun and, like, the grassy shoulders and the, like, tin can on his head. That's Solaire. And to back up a little bit, all the Dark Souls games are kind of about the same thing, which is about, like, the world as we know it is fading, it's decaying, it's not sustainable, the undead are becoming prevalent, the gods have left us or have decayed into husks of what they were. You know, just that everything's kind of on this downward trajectory, and you need to either restore things to the way they were, or there's always a choice, like, restore things to the way they were, or set up some kind of new age. Usually it's an age of dark.
Is that actually a part of the game, or is that just, like, the lore?
That's, like, the ending. Like, you always, every single game, I think, of the Dark Souls series, you, like, choose between, like, there's usually, like, a light ending and a dark ending, but a lot of people will tell you the dark ending is honestly the good ending, because the light ending is just you saying, like, okay, we put things back to the way they were, but they're going to decay again. And that's kind of just restarting the clock over and over, and it's not letting the world kind of progress. Whereas the dark ending is saying, like, okay, we've had, you know, the time of sunlight, now's the time of darkness. That's just the way the world progresses, and that's okay. So, like, it, I don't know, you can go on YouTube and find people talking for hours about, like, which ending is the better ending and why.
And I'm assuming which one is, like, the good and which one is the evil ending,
right?
Too, right?
And arguably, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, maybe it isn't really good or evil. It's mm-hmm. just a choice between,
you it's know, just like, what are the vibes you're feeling that day?
Yeah, yeah. And just to be clear, you know, if you've never played a FromSoft game, a lot of what is communicated with you is communicated via implication, via item description, via environmental context. Mm-hmm. Or, like, the NPCs talk very vaguely about things. There's a lot of, like, I don't know, they say something mysterious and then trail off into laughter. Like, it's very vague. Any interpretation of it, I think, is fair. Whatever you take from it, it's kind of like when you read, like, I don't know, high literature, and you just, like, it's what you take from it that matters. It's not so much, like, what's the canonical interpretation of, like, why Gatsby wants Daisy so much. I don't know. Like, it's what you take from it. But Solaire is in this kind of decaying, frayed, awful world. And he's just so upbeat. And that's why he stands out to people, I think. Because he's just like, yeah, I'm looking for the sun. I'm a sun bro. Let's do some jolly cooperation. And, you know, once you encounter him a few times, I think he starts getting kind of flirty with the character, which is interesting, especially, you know, if you're playing a male character, which I assume a lot of people do, since, you know, these games, a lot of men love these games. And so he basically implies that, like, oh, running into you again, you must have feelings for me.
Is he, and, like, the less horny, what is it, a horse infant? I forget his name. I just know him as horse infant.
Horshafon from...
Yes, thank from, you.
That's a good comparison. He's very friendly, very, like, in your corner. He can help you in the final battle, even. And he also, like, depending on how you progress his story, there's also a very tragic ending for him. So, yeah,
oh, no.
I think that's a good comparison, is Harushafan from Final Fantasy XIV. That's the thing about all these games, is that everyone kind of has a tragic ending. Should have mentioned that.
Yeah, yeah, I've seen people play the game a little bit, and it looks mean. That's why I haven't played it. I don't know, like, something about it is probably going to make me very sad or frustrated. And I think both are true, because I've seen my cousin likes these games a lot.
Okay.
And what I've seen of him play it, it's just, like, him fighting the same thing over and over and over again. Even though I know it's, like, different locations and stuff, but to me, like, it all looks way too similar, and it's always, like, all this dodging and weaving and, like, timing your hits and strikes. And I don't know, something about that is so constraining to me personally that I don't think I would like these games. But as someone who watched people play, they're very fun to watch because, first of all, you get a lot of screaming.
Yeah.
Also, there's just something very satisfying about the rhythm of it when I'm not the one that has to do it.
Yep.
It's an interesting mix. I get it.
And I will say this, like, I think there are many different ways to play these games, and you can make it as hard for yourself as you want it to be. Like, you can definitely play them and say, like, I'm going to play this using, you know, only a normal sword with no magic and no summoning help, and set kind of constraints for yourself and make it a very difficult game. But there's a lot of ways to make these games very easy, which is what I did for Demon Souls, because I got stuck pretty quickly and I switched over to magic, and magic is just like a cheat code that allows you to win very easily. So I don't know. I think the difficulty of them comes in, there is a learning curve and they are not easy, and the game doesn't tell you much about like the systems that you can use to like really break things.
Mm-hmm.
And how they work. But if you can figure them out, I think you can make all the games actually pretty straightforward. There's definitely going to be some bosses who are really difficult. Most of them are actually optional. The most difficult bosses are usually optional, with one or two exceptions. Ornstein and Smo from Dark Souls 1 being probably the most legendarily difficult battle for most players that is a required battle. Yeah, I understand that these games aren't for everyone. I think more people would like them if they gave them a try. And I think there's a lot of gatekeeping that happens in the community of like, oh, you did that fight with spirit summons, that doesn't count, you had help. And it's like, no, however people want to play these games, let them play it the way they want to play it. And like, if you beat the boss, you beat the boss. If you know, like, progress is progress regardless of how you achieved it. And that's my philosophy. And if you have a stricter philosophy, that's fine. It's just don't impose it on other people. And I think, I don't know, as always with everything nerdy, there's some gatekeeping that happens, and it's unfortunate. But
yeah, some people prefer to stack three horses on top of each other to climb over a fence, and others just walk through the gate.
What is that from?
So Critical Role, they actually did a one-shot where they played an Elden Ring kind of like thing.
I watched that. I listened to that, but
yeah, okay.
I don't remember. Someone stacked three horses.
That's the only thing I know about it, because I haven't watched it yet. But yeah, there's an entire conversation about how they can like stack three horses on top of each other by summoning them and make like a horse ladder for them to get over something. I don't know the context. I just know that happened, and it's amazing.
Okay. I have to admit, when I watched it, I was also cleaning, so I might have, like, I don't know,
been... You missed the horse conversation?
I might have been in the bathroom scrubbing the toilet or something when that happened. I like to, when I'm doing, like, actual play podcasts or whatever, I need to be doing something.
Yeah, absolutely. But you missed the horse conversation?
I guess I missed the horse conversation.
I'm gonna send it to you immediately.
Okay.
But tell me more things about
we need to talk
gay,
about FromSoft.
Gay souls.
We're going to switch over to trans souls, because we're going to talk about Gwendolyn.
Ooh.
So Gwendolyn, it's hard. Okay, so I'm going to use female pronouns for Gwendolyn, because I think that's probably what the character is intended to have, I would imagine. Although all the item descriptions are written from the perspective of Gwendolyn's father, Gwyn, the Lord of Sunlight, the God of Sunlight, and use male pronouns for Gwendolyn. But I think Gwendolyn, if I had to like guess, would prefer female pronouns. So that's what I'm going to use. So okay. Gwendolyn, I'll send you a picture first of all.
Yes, please.
Because you'll see this and be like, that is a woman.
I love seeing women. Show it to me. Show me the picture. Ooh, okay, I've seen this before.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's technically, I think, fan art of her, but, like, that's her vibe. She's wearing a dress, this long flowing white dress with this kind of golden mantle and this crazy golden helmet.
And she's got boobies.
Yeah. Like,
which is what I saw first.
Exactly. So, like, what you learn from the item descriptions is that she was assigned male at birth, but raised as a goddess. by her father because she's affiliated with the moon, and I guess in Dark Souls...
And the moon is a lady?
The moon is very feminine in all these games for some reason. I don't know why, but it's a it's a theme across all... I mean, like, I know, like, it's got ties to the, like, menstrual cycle and whatnot, but, like, the moon is always... Yeah, the moon is always feminine in FromSoft games.
It's because she's, like, dainty and pale and white, let's be real. There are some connotations associated with the depictions of moons in human society.
Yes. So, Gwyndolin, you actually... I think you don't have to encounter Gwyndolin in Dark Souls 1. She is actually the only god remaining in the City of the Gods... in Orlando. Not Florida. I knew you were going to make that joke. Not Orlando. In Orlando.
Okay.
Where she is actually masquerading as her sister, which I will send you a picture of.
Okay.
Who is very famous for an obvious reason. Her sister, Guinevere. I understood
immediately.
Yeah. Her sister, Guinevere.
For two reasons, I would say.
For two reasons. Guinevere is very famous, and what you learn, actually, if you try
They're
to
very closely related reasons.
Jesus. if you attack Guinevere, the illusion fades, and you learn that Gwyndolin has been masquerading as Guinevere, and basically keeping up illusions that the gods are still in Orlando, and that it isn't just kind of this decayed, sad... Twilight Kingdom. Again, it ties into the, kind of the larger themes that all the gods have left or are dead, and Gwyndolin is just there keeping up appearances. You do fight her at a certain point, Gwyndolin.
Oh no.
Yeah.
It's unclear.
It's unclear if the gods actually die though, because Gwyndolin reappears in Dark Souls 3, this time having been devoured by one of the Lords of Cinder, who eats gods. So, regardless.
I was going to say, I cannot make jokes.
I forget the name of the thing that ate her, but it's this weird, gross black ooze, basically, who used to be a person. I don't know,
It's Dark Souls.
It's Dark Souls. It's a little irrelevant, but... Yeah, that's Gwyndolin. So, like...
I like her. She's very pretty. She has cool vibes.
And she's trying her best to, like, maintain order.
She even looks like she's angry.
Her father and her sister... Well, her father has basically gone hollow. Like, he's become, like, a shell of a human being and gone mad. And her sister, like, fled for another world, basically. So, she's the one who's, like, there still trying to just keep up appearances.
Mm-hmm.
So
how very hero of her.
Yeah, Gwyndolin's doing her best.
There's a bird just like screaming.
I know, I can hear it. It's a little distracting, but it is what it is, I guess.
It sounds like a person in a bird body.
I thought it was one of your siblings at first before I realized, like, no, that's a bird.
Oh, man. Sunday noon.
Yeah.
Best time to record.
Just a pleasant afternoon, Sunday afternoon recording session. Okay, so I'm guessing I maybe missed some stuff, but that's Dark Souls.
Okay.
And I was going to move on to Bloodborne. Do you have any questions or thoughts before I start talking about Bloodborne?
I don't think I had questions because I don't know enough about the world to really, like, dig deep into it.
Okay.
And all of my thoughts went out the window.
With the bird.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me talk about Bloodborne. And I need to set this one up a bit more to explain kind of what's going on. Because I feel like Bloodborne is its own game. So Bloodborne is like one of my favorite video games of all time. So this is going to be a moment. So Bloodborne is set in Yharnam. And in this city of Yharnam, monsters are prowling the streets.
Can you repeat the name of the city?
Yharnam.
Okay.
Like yarn that you make clothing out of with ham at the end. Yharnam.
Gotcha. Thank you.
There's monsters. People are stricken with a bestial curse and they mindlessly assault any unlucky soul caught outside. The people who aren't cursed bar their doors and huddle inside their homes, relying only on incense that is thought to keep away the monsters. And there they huddle, hoping to survive the night. The last bastion of hope, the healing church, seems to have abandoned their mission. And over the course of the night, you, a hunter from some foreign land who has journeyed here to Yharnam for blood healing, meet a handful of oddities and outcasts who are clinging to life, and you become a hunter who fights against the bestial scourge. Mechanically, it's very similar to the Dark Souls series, and thematically, there's a similar theme of kind of just that decay, because once again, there was, you know, like a working society, but like everything decayed over time, and like the healing church kind of fell. Basically, they all became beasts themselves. The city is just filled with monsters. Everything that was once good is now bad, or becoming bad. But it's also a little different, I think, from Dark Souls in the sense that, like, the theme is not about fixing the world or finding a new path forward for the world or changing the world. It's very internally focused on the hunter, the character you play, who basically is awakened to this world, this lasting night, and what are you sending? Oh my god. Okay. Thanks, Val.
You're welcome.
I'm not even gonna explain what you just said.
You don't need to. This is just for the two of us. So this is the, like, overall, like, the general plot, or just a plot of, like, an area?
This is the overall general plot.
Okay, gotcha,
Like, the vast majority of it takes place in Yharnam, or in kind of the surrounding areas, except for there's one part where you go into, like, a dream sequence, but anyways, that's the game. It's all about Yharnam, but it's all about kind of this internal adventure. It's about insight, it's about learning things, and it's about how your character grows as they learn things. So, to give an example of this, is that the game starts off, and you're mostly fighting very classic horror monsters. You're fighting werewolf, beast men type people, zombies, I don't know, big ghoul guys, just that kind of vibe. And halfway through the game, something happens, and the moon changes color. And suddenly, because of something you did, basically, and suddenly you're back at the beginning, and you realize that these Cthulhu Lovecraftian horrors have been around you the entire time.
Cool.
They've been clinging to buildings. You just couldn't see them because you didn't have the insight, the knowledge to know that they were there. And in that kind of Lovecraftian sense that, like, there's, you know, great horrors just that we can't perceive, because if we were able to perceive them, it would drive us mad. And that's a key theme here going on, is that, like, you have finally gotten the knowledge necessary to see these horrors with your own eyes. And it's so perfect because there's so many little hints to it. Like, there's one area early on in the game you go to, and this happened to me, where, like, if you stand in this area, somehow your character just floats up into the air and dies. I thought it was a bug. I was like, something happened. The enemy was invisible and killed me. And then, no, you learn it's because you went up, you basically touched one of these creatures that you can't see, and it kills you. And now you can see it, and you can see that's what's happening. And it's
amazing.
There's all, right?
That's really cool.
Yes. Like, it, like, really changes the way you view the game. Another big theme that kind of is what I want to focus on it for this, because is motherhood, because that's so important in this game. Like, there are a lot of moms and a lot of, like, non-traditional, dare I say, queer moms in this story. I think there's only one case where someone mentions, like, their father, but there's so many moms, and all of them are kind of, like, non-traditional or weird, or I don't know, there's just a lot of, like, to me what I would call like queer motherhood in this game. So just to like offhand start listing off like all the times motherhood comes up, let me just start with that. So in the earliest area, a girl tasks you with finding her mother. You find that the mom fell to her death, which is really sad. There's a boss called the One Reborn, and it's birthed from the moon in a cutscene. It's really gross. To get the good ending, you have to consume 3 pieces of a great one's, like a Lovecraftian horror's, like a Elder God's umbilical cord. You literally have to eat an umbilical cord to get the good ending.
Gotcha.
And then in the good ending, you become an infant great one. So like this little like baby Lovecraftian horror, that's the good ending, is you ascending to become a Lovecraftian horror. And you're picked up by so the character that helps you level up is a doll. She doesn't have a name, she's always just called the doll. She picks you up.
She has a Jersey accent.
Not quite, but she picks you up and basically like it's implied that she's going to like mother you, this infant great one. So like she becomes your mom. It's real, and she's a doll. She's a puppet.
Mm-hmm.
The boss that you defeat that reveals kind of the true story of what's going on, where you get to see the Lovecraftian horrors, is a mother spider.
I love mother spiders. Those are the creepiest, coolest characters ever.
You rescue a sex worker. Towards the end of the game, she runs off and hides from you and gives birth to, like, this creepy baby that's abnormal. I don't know. You actually have to kill the baby, and that gives you one of the umbilical cords you need to eat.
That sucks.
One of the bosses is called Murgo's Wet Nurse. Okay. And the music for the fight is a music box lullaby, and also there's the sound.
I love when games do that.
Yeah, and also there's the sound of a baby crying during the fight.
Oh.
Another boss is visibly pregnant, but also has a red blood stain on the front of her dress. And when you fight her as a boss, you can hear a baby crying again, and the cries of the child can paralyze you.
I mean, that reflects reality.
Yeah, and finally, there's a boss called the Orphan of Kos, which emerges from its dead mother and attacks you with its still attached placenta.
I love that.
Yes.
Is this a comedy game?
It is not. The Orphan of Kos also has this scream that always makes me think of Michael Jackson. Just this, like, very, this great woo sound it does. I can't do it justice. I'm not even going to try. But, like, it is not a comedy game. It is a horror game. The way I think I'm presented in this list, it seems kind of goofy. But, like, motherhood is a key theme here, is what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
The moon is also in this. And because it is a FromSoft game, the moon is female. It is, in fact, you learn Flora of the Moon. It's actually the secret boss. You kill the moon presence get the good ending after eating the umbilical cord. And so all these mothers are shown without fathers. Fathers aren't really present in Bloodborne. There's one father, and he's the first or second boss you fight. And he's, by that point, such a beast that he doesn't even know right from wrong. I don't know. To me, I don't really have any textual evidence for this, but to me, this game is just very queer. It's all about transformation. It's all about a found family, and it's all about these mothers who are, they don't fit in, or they don't have fathers or husbands or boyfriends or anything. They don't, and they're raising children. And to me, that there's an undeniable queerness to it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Yeah. So long story short, that's Bloodborne. I don't think there's any canonical queerness, aside from the fact that when you meet the doll, the character that made her, if you're playing a female hunter or a male hunter, he implies you can use the doll for whatever you like if it pleases you, which is really creepy. He's really creepy. He ends up being a bad guy, so.
Okay.
But that's about, yeah, that's Bloodborne. Any thoughts on that?
I liked all of what you said.
Yes.
That's all interesting. I definitely will not play this game.
It's very good, though. It's very horrifying, and I'm kind of selling it short. There's a lot of, like, there's a lot of things that just mess with your mind in it. Like, you come across something, and you're just like, it just breaks your brain a little. I'm just so hoarse right now. I'm three horses stacked on top of each other. Okay, so that's Bloodborne. To me, like, the queerness is a little less direct, but it's all about queer motherhood in my mind. And
so, okay, question.
Yeah, ask questions. Yes, please.
I know that this is, like, a focus on motherhood, mm-hmm. but how much of it has... Are there themes of maybe just, like, the idea of women and being impure? I don't know. There's just something from what you were talking
it's
about.
It's really
how,
interesting.
Like, a lot of it is corruption. There's, like, sex work. There's, it's, like, dirty, things like that. I don't know.
So yeah, that's a good point. So it's interesting because one of the themes of the game is that the kind of the pure-hearted people are actually the most corrupt or the most evil. Mm-hmm. For instance, you meet the head of the healing church, Vicar Amelia. And so she's the head of the church. And when you meet her, she's praying. And as she's praying, she transforms into a monster, and then you fight her. You rescue a nun at one point, and she spends the whole game. She, like, is clearly very upset with the sex worker. I forget both their names, by the way. They've got names. I don't remember. But the nun, like, if you're talking to this to the mm-hmm. sex worker, the nun, like, looks over, and you can see her, like, spying on you. While you're talking, because you rescue them and you take them back to the safe spot, so they're all hanging out in this chapel together, but, like, they're in different areas, but you can see that the nun is spying on you. And in fact, if you provoke the nun enough, she kills the sex worker.
Really?
And it's like, yes.
Oh, man.
And then you also learn that the Healing Church was basically founded by this guy who basically meddled in things that he could not understand. And again, there's kind of this element of, like, they took something that, like, they knew was unsafe, which was the blood of the old ones, and decided to, like, base a religion on it and all inject each other with it. And so, like, again, it's just kind of like everything pure in the game is actually corrupt. You also meet a hunter. Oh, what's his name? I want to say it's like Alfred or something. And he is obsessed with finding his way to this place called Castle Kanehurst, which is basically, like, being ruled by this vampire queen. You meet her, and she's honestly pretty chill. Like, I don't know. She doesn't seem... She's pretty nice.
She's fine.
Yeah, she's fine.
She's just hanging out.
Well, she was imprisoned there, and then they forced an iron mask onto her head so that she can't feed easily, I guess.
That is awful.
And if you go there, he wants to know how to get there because he wants to kill her. Like, okay. not just imprison her, but actually kill her. And if you tell him how to get there, he goes there and he kills her. But it's clear that, like, this was not done as an act of, like, purity. This was almost like an act of, like, sexual gratification to kill this woman for him.
Gross.
He like talks about it in the super creepy way of, like, what he did, and he's like, oh, her insides squirmed while I smashed them into bits and stuff. Like, it's really gross. He's a really gross guy. And so, like, there's just this constant theme of, like, the pure-hearted are the most corrupt of all.
So I'm assuming the church is, like, the villain.
Guy. Well, they definitely are the... I mean... It's tough to say who the actual, like, bad guy is in this because it's an inner journey. It's about learning and growing so that you can, as happens in the good ending, become greater than what you are. So in that sense, the antagonist is kind of, I don't know, like, the outside world and what you have to learn from it. But, like, the Healing Church did set off this whole bestial scourge. Like, they meddled mm-hmm. in things they shouldn't have. They were warned about it. They were told, you know, fear the old blood, and they didn't listen. And they injected everyone in the town with the old blood, and they all turned into monsters.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. Good questions.
Okay. Yeah. That's very interesting. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, so you've got, like, again, so I feel like, yeah, the church is bad. There's not a lot of families left. You've got this found family that you kind of build by all the people you rescue over the course of the game. And it's a very non-traditional group. You know, you've got the man you encounter in the chapel that becomes kind of your refuge. He's got a lot of disabilities is how I describe him. He's definitely, there's a lot of things wrong with him, but he's super friendly. You've got the sex worker, you've got the nun, you've got this skeptical man. You've got a few people who come and go. There's the hunter, the crow hunter, Eileen the crow, who becomes kind of a mentor figure if you progress her quest. I love Eileen the crow, by the way.
He's that's like, who you based one of the characters on that we fought.
Yep.
Cool. Was it her actual image?
Yeah, I used an image of her for our D&D campaign. Cool. I like her.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, Eileen the crow. Yeah, so there's, I don't know, just this found family thing, which I think has an inherent queerness to it. And then there's all this motherhood, but it's like very non-traditional motherhood. Anyway, I want to talk about Elden Ring because we only have, I don't know, like 20 minutes left.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's the one about the elderly.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. This is the Elder Ring. It's a game set in a retirement community.
You just have to keep all the doors closed.
Yep. Make sure no one wanders off to the bus station. Okay, so Elden Ring, first of all, I want to note, is written by George R.R. Martin. So unlike the previous games that were written, I think, primarily by Miyazaki, who's usually the producer, lead developer, whatever his title is, of the games, this one's written by the Game of Thrones man himself, for better or worse, depending on your thoughts on Game of Thrones. Elden Ring is very similar to Dark Soul vibes. You're in a place called the Lands Between. It is a place of gods, demigods, I don't know, and other divine figures that have now started to kind of fade. There once all the gods were peace and harmony, but then one of the demigods attacked. Yeah, then the Fire Nation attacked.
No, the Avatar attacked.
The Avatar attacked.
In this case, the moon is like the bad guy, so it's all backwards.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
We've solved the puzzle.
Yes. So there's kind of like this royal family of gods, but the important part is that like one Godwin the Golden gets killed in the Night of the Black Knives, and that kind of causes all the gods to fear that they're going to die, and they all go to war, and your character is what's called a Tarnished, and they arrive and basically have to set things right, either by, again, Dark Souls-esque, ushering in a new way of thinking and doing things, or by restoring what's called the Golden Order, that was like what used to be like with all the gods, restoring the Golden Order. So it's, you know, it's kind of, again, very similar to Dark Souls. Things once were better, now they're worse. And you get to choose where it goes from there. But I'm going to focus on a lot of the demigods because they are the most important figures in the game. They make up most of the bosses, most of the main bosses, I believe. And there's a lot of queerness going on with them. So the first one I'm going to talk about, because she ties in with all the others, is Merica and Radagon. Merica. Not America. Merica.
Okay, gotcha. You paused because you knew it was funny.
I knew it was funny. I was going to say, I'm like, I'm going to have to explain. It's not America. It's Merica. So Merica is the queen of the gods. I don't know if she's a demigod or god. I think she's just a full-on god. And she is the one who, like, kind of is the linchpin of, like, what's called the Golden Order or the Greater Will. She basically holds everything together in terms of how the society in this world works. You do learn some things about her, like, that she might not be all that powerful herself. She might actually kind of be a prisoner of the Golden Order and kind of trapped by it, but that's not all that important. The interesting thing about Merica is that she's actually one half of, or she's two people, Merica and Radagon, who is male. So she's got a female half and a male half. And they're the same person, but they're also able to separate. It's never quite clear how that works. It's also unclear if they are like two people who were joined together to become one person, or if they were always one person. But they are full on people. Like, Radagon leaves Merica at one point, goes and hooks up with Renala and sires several children with her. He then leaves Renala, goes back to Merica, and they have children together.
Wait.
So she has children with herself, basically.
Okay. I guess to each their own, as long as it's herself.
Yeah, because she has Mikala twins, Mikala and Melania. And it's implied possibly that this kind of, I don't even know if this, this like self-cest had consequences. Mikala is cursed with like eternal childhood. And Melania has a curse called the Scarlet Rot. And we'll talk about them in a second. But
okay. I think you told me a little bit about that.
We'll talk about it more in a second, because both those characters also have queer themes going on. Yeah, so we've got the main kind of antagonist, I guess, of this series, of this game, is this character who is both male and female simultaneously, separately, and together. So it's this big bundle of
gender.
Merica and Radagon are just this big bundle of gender. That's the best way to put it. Like, just big cluster pile gender mess. And that's the main god. So understandably, a lot of other crazy stuff comes from that. And a lot of other incestuous stuff comes from that. Merica, before she married herself, Radagon herself, was married to Godfrey. And through Godfrey bore two twins, Moog and Morgott.
It's somehow always a Godfrey, though.
Yeah. As well as Godwin the Golden, but he's not important. He dies. So Moog, who is voiced by Izzy from Our Flag Means Death, Con O'Neill.
Oh, cool. Okay.
You know, there's our connection. Moog is creepy as hell looking.
It is Moog.
I'm going to send you a picture of Moog.
Okay. Ooh, a little goat fella. I've seen this dude.
Yeah, he's creepy looking. He's what's called an omen. Basically, he has all these horns growing from his face and he's all like mutated. Moog is perhaps the most transparently gay character we've ever had in a FromSoft game, in that he kidnaps Mikala, who is his half-brother, and who is permanently trapped as a child, and he is in love with Mikala, and says he's going to start a new dynasty with Mikala as his consort.
So there's a lot of weird incesty stuff happening in this game.
Yes, there's even more that's going to happen, so
okay.
Enjoy. Actually, I think that might be it for the incest, but yes, so... Moog kidnaps Mikala and is going to make Mikala his consort, and Mikala has no say in the matter. Mikala is trapped as a child. We don't know too much about Mikala yet. There's been a little bit of, like, we don't really know what Mikala looks like or anything. The theory is that Mikala is going to be an important part of the DLC.
Okay.
But Moog is probably the, like, yeah, there's some implication that Moog has sexually assaulted Mikala.
Aww.
So, yeah. Sorry, first. Oh, God. First, very, like, canonically gay character is bad. Yeah, that's Moog. He's awful. He's the worst. You get to kill him twice.
Cool.
Good. Melania, who is Mikala's twin sister, the one inflicted with the Scarlet Rot, actually goes to war with her half brother, Radon, and she goes to war with him, nearly loses, and so she lets loose her Scarlet Rot, her curse, which basically drives people crazy. It afflicts them, it basically destroys them from the inside out. But when she lets loose her curse, she basically falls unconscious. She is found by one of her knights, the Clean Rot Knight Finlay. And Finlay carries her all the way back to their home. And Finlay is female, and I don't know, people have just run wild because the art, there's just fan art.
I've seen it. Okay, I know who you're talking about now.
I'll read the actual description. Finlay was one of the few survivors of the Battle of Aeonia who, in an unimaginable act of heroism, carried the slumbering demigod Melania all the way back to the Hallig Tree. She managed the feat alone, fending off all manner of foes along the way. So everyone is obsessed with Finlay and this kind of implied love story where Finlay loves Melania so much that she carries her. It's not a short distance in the game. It's basically like the equivalent of, like, I don't know, carrying someone through several war zones.
It's like Sam carrying Frodo to Mordor.
Yeah, that times 10. There's a lot of love in it, and there's a lot of great art of the two. I don't know. So it's implied, but like everyone's run wild with it. If you ever want some great art of just two lady knights who are usually pretty bloody carrying each other.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Yeah.
You showed me that one, right?
Yep.
Okay.
But there's
a lot out there. Yeah. I've seen a fit. It is not straight.
Yeah. So that's another kind of queer character. And then lest the main character feel left out, there is actually an opportunity for the main character to marry a woman. Regardless of the main character's gender, your character's gender, you are the tarnished.
The mushroom.
Lady Ronnie, Lunar Princess Ronnie. You can marry her as part of her questline. So you learn a lot about Ronnie. She's actually the one who shattered the Golden Order by stealing the Rune of Death and killing that demigod, or at least putting events into place that would result in the demigod dying. But you learn throughout her quest, she is a demigod of the moon. She sacrificed her own body and put her soul into a doll. Because, again, this is a FromSoft game and dolls have to figure in somehow. And the moon is there and she's goddess of the moon. But if you continue her quest long enough, there's a part where you get a basically a wedding ring. I think you get it from her mom, from Ronnie's mom. And then you go and you find her puppet body where it actually is, because before you're kind of communicating with like a projection of her. And there's this very intimate scene where you put the ring on her finger and she's like, oh, so you were going to be my consort all along. It's a fitting match, blah, blah, blah. And yeah, basically she becomes your wife.
You get wifed up?
Yeah, you get married. You get
married.
Yeah,
I know. You told me that. You were so excited when you got to that part. It was so cool.
Because
you
were just like, I didn't expect it. I just came across it. Like, I kind of looked up how to do stuff. I had like a spoiler-free guide of like how to do every character's quest line because I didn't want to miss things. And then I'm like, oh. You know, like, she's calling me her lord and her dear consort. Okay, I guess I just got married. In the ending, her ending, Ronnie has a special ending called the Age of Stars ending, where basically you rule the lands between together as spouses, as wives.
That's cute.
Yeah, so there's an uplifting, positive ending if you get that ending. So, there you go. So there is one. There's one happy ending. I wanted to end on a positive note.
That is a very positive note.
And Elden Ring, I will say this, is probably the easiest of all the games just because it's an open world. And if anything's too hard, you can just go somewhere else, level up, get more stuff. Like, and there's a lot of things that, like, just they've added so many items that can just, like, break fights for you. So, like, if you haven't played any of them, I actually recommend Elden Ring as a starting point because it's probably the one that, it's not the easiest, it's the one you can make the easiest, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's like there are a lot of ways around the thing. Yes,
yeah, like because there's spirit summons which allow you to summon like creatures to fight for you, and you can summon a duplicate of yourself as one of the spirit summons.
Oh man, I would hate having a double of me.
Yeah, but like in game, it's awful. Really nice because it has the same abilities as you. And so if you've got good abilities, you can just like, I don't know, like double I did that. It. Well, you can basically like stun lock enemies to death because if you've got the right abilities and you've got like a stun lock and then both of you are using it. Mm-hmm. It gets really crazy. And then there's some very powerful spells that can just like one shot enemies. It's altogether a much easier to break games than the previous ones. I also think like, I don't know, it's just a beautiful game and you can spend easily 200 hours on it. Like, you get your money's worth of Elden Ring, that's for sure. I think any of these games, you kind of get your money's worth, but Elden Ring in particular is just gigantic. It is.
And also, like, everyone keeps replaying them. I don't get it.
Well, because there's so much to do and different endings and different builds to try. Because, like, my first game, I went full magic and I was using the Sword of Night and Flame, which before they patched it was like super broken. And then for my second build, I wanted to dual wield great swords and just like try out like just like giant. I'm just holding two giant swords and it's hilarious just how you like flatten enemies with them. So yeah, you try it again with different builds.
Okay. That's cool. It's definitely not for me. But once again, as someone who has watched people play, it's really fun to watch people play it.
Nice save. I really think they're great games. I think they show like some of the potential of what games can be in terms of like showing, not telling the story and letting you kind of decide what the story is. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of people probably play these games and don't pick up on any of the queerness at all, which is fine. Like, again, it's what you put into it and it's what you get out of it. So I think they're fascinating games. They're a lot of fun. And the story is really fascinating. And I think I should have told this at the beginning, but Miyazaki, the man who wrote most of them, not Elden Ring, but the others, part of how he learned to read English was that he would go to the library and he would read like stories like King Arthur or whatever. But his English wasn't perfect, so he could only understand parts of it. And so he'd have to kind of try and put the story together through context clues. And that's a lot of what these games are
about. Interesting. Okay, yes. That I really like.
Yeah, I should have mentioned that at the beginning. Like, that would have been a great lead-in, but I am stupid and also a little tired.
Don't be mean to my friend.
Okay. Yeah, so that explains kind of like why, how they're structured the way they are.
Do you think, I feel like these games probably have a lot of like papers written about them. I feel like...
That's a good question. Let's go on Google Scholar.
You do it.
Dark Souls appears in 3,400 academic papers.
That makes sense.
Bloodborne is just going to show up as like Bloodborne pathogens. Say Elden Ring appears in 180 papers, which is not bad given that it just came out earlier this year.
And I feel like Dark Souls probably also encompasses a lot of the games. Because it's like the franchise.
Yeah. Oh, there's some funny articles. Okay. The Life Like Death. Dark Souls and the Dialectics in Black. Prepare to Die. Reconceptualizing Death and the Role of Narrative Engagement in the Dark Souls series. The Downward Spiral. Postmodern Consciousness as Buddhist Metaphysics in Dark Souls Video Game Series. Vulnerability Growth in Video Game Narratives. Approaches to Storytelling in Dark Souls 3 and Hellblade Senua's Sacrifice.
Hey, I love that game.
This must be the place.
Send me that one.
Understanding Video Game Placeness through Atmosphere and the Refrain in Dark Souls. Mapping Myth and Analysis of the Hero Myth in From Software's Dark Souls series. How to Deal with Dark Souls, the Aesthetic Category as a Method. Reigniting the Flame of Purpose, exploring the unique open-ended interactive narrative of Dark Souls. Murder and Masochism, exploring violence as a mode of engaging with fiction in From Software's Dark Souls. Wow, there's just so much. These are amazing titles, too.
Send me this. Send me the Senua one.
Yep, I've got it.
I want to read scientific papers that are about video games. Okay. Well, Chloe.
Yeah.
Thank you for telling me about this game.
Yeah, these games.
These games.
Thank you
now
all
tell
so
me
much.
More stuff about what we have.
Yeah, so just to mention our social media, we have a Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. It is at InMediaLez. Our subreddit is r/InMediaLez. Our website is InMediaLez.com. You can email us at InMediaLez@gmail.com. And what is our Tumblr?
Our Tumblr is thepodinmedialess.tumblr.com.
Thank you.
It is very chill.
Yes, feel free to reach out to us on any of these places. Send us an email, like, comment, subscribe, whatever you want to do. Thank you all so much for tuning in. And we'll
see you in the next one.
Yeah, I almost stepped thanks on your
for,
line. I almost stepped
thanks
on
for
your
stepping
line.
On my toes.
Oh my God. And God bless you. And Merica bless you. And Radagon.
And let the moon turn your world upside down.
And may the moon presence guide you.